Britannia rules the waves. Being an island nation with the food and women tasting and looking like they do, it should come as no surprise that we firmly established ourselves as the greatest sailors in the world. After all, the Germans were so proud of building the biggest and most unsinkable battleship in history at the time, and we brought her down on our maiden voyage. Nelson stared down the combined might of the French and Spanish armadas and defeated them so decisively that he practically became a god. There is no shortage of feats that cements the Royal Navy's mastery of the seas. When an enemy appears on the horizon, it's every man to his rope or gun. Quick's the word and sharp's the action. After all, surprise is on our side. With nary a successful invasion since 1066, Britain has made the defence of her waters seem almost effortless. But in one case, it actually was. During World War II, the North Sea saw a fair amount of action. But there was one operation where we sent Jerry packing without even lifting a finger. The Germans set out to attack key infrastructure and got absolutely humiliated for their trouble. They were utterly defeated, but the British weren't even there. So, who defeated the Germans? The Germans. Operation Vikinger. Please leave a like and a comment on this video because it really helps me in the algorithm. But before we get into the video, we have a new sponsor, Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon is here to bring you a cereal that will take you back to a taste of your childhood, while also being high in protein and containing absolutely no sugar. Magic Spoon is keto-friendly, contains natural flavours, and is both gluten, soy, and grain-free. Cereal. Magic Spoon have the same great taste as cereals from your childhood, just upgraded to serve the needs of an adult by containing nothing artificial.
Good cereal.
There is a variety pack that includes the fruity, frosted, cocoa, and peanut butter flavours, but they have tons of other awesome flavours to choose from, like maple waffle, honey nut, birthday cake, blueberry muffin, and even more. Magic Spoon is 140 calories per serving, which contains 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 net grams of carbs per serving. I don't have too much time now since I've became a dad, but it's good to know that I can still enjoy some nostalgic foods without having to worry about eating too much sugar because you can't get away with it like you used to. So, click the link down below to grab a variety pack and try it today, and be sure to use the promo code Dankula at checkout to get $5 off of any order, or go to magicspoon.com/Dankula. And Magic Spoon are so confident in their product that it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So, if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So, click the link down below and use code Dankula for $5 off, or go to magicspoon.com/Dankula to save $5 today. Most of you will probably know about Operation Vikinger already, from the Wikipedia article that laid it out as a battle with the Royal Navy listed as not present, because they weren't involved in the mission at all. The article then became a bit of a meme because, despite not even being there, the outcome of the battle was declared a British victory. Now, don't get me wrong, the meme is very funny and it says a lot about Germany's naval prowess, but it is a bit of a misnomer. Operation Vikinger wasn't actually a battle, and the Wikipedia article has since been changed to reflect that, because those fucking nerds hate fun. So, while you may be feeling disappointed by this little bit of myth-busting, I'm about to make it up to you. Because while Operation Vikinger wasn't actually a battle that the British won literally effortlessly, what actually happened was worse. A lot worse. Now, you'd think that the German Navy would have been a force to be reckoned with, considering how much carnage the U-boats caused during World War I. But in reality, the Kriegsmarine kind of sucked. However, it was not from a lack of effort. Hitler really wanted to build a navy that could rival the sheer power of the Royal Navy, but he was hamstrung by treaties that were signed after World War I. Even after those treaties started to get ignored, the Kriegsmarine got a bit left behind as the war machine ramped up because the Wehrmacht and the Luftwaffe were getting all of the manpower and materials that they needed, which left the Germans without much left over for their navy. For perspective, Admiral Karl Dönitz said that the Kriegsmarine would need 1,000 submarines to go toe-to-toe with the Royal Navy. But they only ended up getting 57 submarines. The first nail in the coffin for Operation Vikinger was the fact that, like many other mid-century Germans, Hermann Göring was a bit of a control freak, and he really wanted all of the planes all to himself. Therefore, all of Germany's aircraft was under the control of the Luftwaffe, which meant that despite also having a need for speed, the Kriegsmarine had no Tom Cruises lying around. So, if they wanted any kind of air support for their missions, they had to ask the Luftwaffe really nicely for it. Unfortunately, battleships were just sort of going out of fashion in favour of aerial combat over the sea, which left the Kriegsmarine sort of relegated to mine warfare. Instead of actually fighting the Royal Navy head on, they would just booby trap the sea and then leave via the routes that they left clear and regularly cleaned up with minesweepers. However, in February of 1940, the Kriegsmarine got a real job to do: disrupt the British fishing operations in the Dogger Bank in the North Sea, which saw up to 60 trawlers a day. The economic impact of such a mission is obvious: starvation by attacking our food supply. But another goal was to damage British morale. After all, if we can't get anything from the chippy on a Friday night, why live? But it wasn't just the trawlers that drew the Kriegsmarine's attention to the Dogger Bank. There was also reports of British submarines and generally suspicious activity in the area that did warrant investigation. So Operation Vikinger was launched to sort it all out. Oh, and Vikinger translates to Viking, because North Sea. On the 19th of February 1940, a flotilla of destroyers led by Friedrich Eckholt and rounded out with Richard Bautzen, Erich Kollner, Theodor Ridel, Max Schultz, and Leberecht Mass, fucking Hutten Scooten Frutenbooten, fucking German names, was sent out to investigate and do a little trolling. And this wasn't a crew of six guys, those were the actual names of the six destroyers that made up the flotilla. Of course, the German ships had boring sounding people names. Never mind giving your vessels cool names like Victory or Audacious. Just look at a giant fucking death machine and go, yep, that looks like a gym. Sorry. Considering how airtight their stuff needed to be, I can see why the German Navy couldn't afford the drip that Hugo Boss had to offer. Also, it feels a little weird to be calling ships by male names when we refer to ships as she. But I think it's safe to say that the Germans at this point in time had a pretty emphatic view on such issues. As far as they were concerned, if it had a big cannon, it was a he. And that cannon was going to get pointed at you if you disagreed. But anyway, the flotilla set out along the clear path in the minefield towards the Dogger Bank, and along the way, it quickly became apparent that things were not shipshape. The Kriegsmarine had asked the Luftwaffe for air support, and they received nothing. But that didn't mean that the destroyers would be out there alone. It turned out that the Luftwaffe had their own mission planned and were heading out to the same place at the same time. The division carrying out the mission was the Ex-Flieger Corps, or 10th Air Corps, who were planning to send out two squadrons of HE-111 bombers to disrupt the British merchant ships. But despite the Luftwaffe not giving the Kriegsmarine any air support for their own mission, you would think that their presence in the same area at the same time would warrant at least some coordination between them. And you would be wrong. At around midday on the 22nd of February, the ex-Flieger Corps did send a message to the Kriegsmarine HQ to give them a heads up that they would be outflying in the North Sea, and about 15 minutes later, the HQ passed on two messages. A weather update and an announcement that a British bomber had been shot down. They didn't tell the destroyers about the Flieger Corps mission. Then, between 1 and 3pm, the Kriegsmarine contacted two different divisions of the Luftwaffe, asking for recon planes to fly ahead of them and for fighters to support them that afternoon and for the return journey home the following morning. However, neither of these divisions were in contact with the ex-Flieger Corps. So, the bombers still didn't know that the German flotilla was out there. And about an hour after that, the ex-Flieger Corps asked the Kriegsmarine to remove some blockade balloons and give the anti-aircraft guns a heads up that German bombers would be out that night, so that they didn't get shot at by their own anti-aircraft guns. Then, the Kriegsmarine finally contacted ex-Flieger Corps and asked them to provide air support for the journey home the following morning. And upon receiving this request, Major Martin Herlinghausen, the Chief of Staff of the ex-Flieger Corps, said, "If they're on their way home, then that means they're out there tonight with our bombers." That would have been great to know earlier. So he asked the Kriegsmarine, "Do you guys have any destroyers out in the area where our mission is taking place?" And they basically responded with, "Yeah. Why?" So, finally, albeit a little bit too late, everything clicked. A flotilla of destroyers and two squads of bombers were going to meet under the cover of night without any prior knowledge whatsoever of each other's presence. And it being nighttime meant that the ships and the planes wouldn't be able to identify each other. Can everyone see where this is going? This was a recipe for absolute disaster. And it was 25 to 6 at this point, so it was too late to tell the bombers because they were already on the runway taking off. But the Kriegsmarine could have radioed the destroyers to tell them, "Hey, you're going to have some bombers flying over you. They're ours, so please don't shoot them." But for some fucking reason, they just didn't bother to tell them. So, as we are about to see, this complete breakdown in communication would go on to have disastrous results. But all the chuckle fucks in both headquarters could do was just wait and hope that it would all turn out fine. It did not turn out fine. At 1900 on the 22nd of February, it proved to be a very clear moonlit night, and a lone bomber that was out exploring noticed a wake, which is basically a water chemtrail in the sea with a shadow in front of it. It was one of the ships in the flotilla which was rushing through the clear path in the minefield as quickly as possible. Then, at around 15:15, the bomber flew over the destroyer twice without identifying itself or giving any impression that it recognised the ships below. This immediately drew the flotilla's attention, but luckily three of the ships recognised their fellow kraut and just let him be. But unfortunately, the others didn't get a good enough look at it and thought it was a British recon plane. So they freaked out and immediately opened fire. Naturally, the bomber pilot didn't take too kindly to being attacked, and he responded by returning fire with his own machine guns. One of the bridge crew aboard the Max Schultz then noticed the German cross on the bomber's wing and was quick to tell the other ships to stop firing because the plane was friendly. However, the rest of the flotilla didn't believe him. And they were like, "Fuck this, of course he's hostile. He's shooting at us," even though they were the ones that shot at him first. Eventually, the bomber disengaged, but the destroyers didn't seem to realise that it wasn't retreating, it was climbing. At around quarter to eight, three bombs fell out of the sky, one of which hit and damaged Lebrecht Mass, which immediately signalled being hit need assistance to the other ships. The flotilla began to turn around to assist, but was soon ordered to stay in formation by Friedrich Eckold, who stayed behind to help. Then it was bombs away for the second time, and Lebrecht Mass was nailed so directly that she was torn asunder by two massive explosions. Yes, the bomber had dropped such a fat load that it ended up leaving the water full of semen. Look, let me have one. Friedrich Eckold then sent out a message to the others over the radio: "To all ships, Mass is sinking, send boats," as the bomber then left for real this time. So things are pretty bad, but don't worry, they're about to get a lot fucking worse. We've reached the part of the story where everything that could go wrong is about to go wrong. In the aftermath of the bombing, the flotilla descended into complete chaos as the remaining ships scrambled to make evasive maneuvers and rescue the survivors from Lebrecht Mass, which led to the situation quickly reaching a fever pitch when the Max Schultz just fucking exploded just out of nowhere for seemingly no reason. Just boom, ship fucking gone. This caused even more confusion because no one had heard any planes coming. What had actually happened was the Max Schultz had hit a sea mine and sank, but the rest of the flotilla didn't realise this, so the crew of Theodore Rydell believed they were being attacked by a submarine. They fucking shit themselves and dropped four depth charges. And to add insult to injury, the depth charges exploded too soon and jammed the ship's rudder. The crew of Theodore Rydell had damaged their own ship and gotten themselves stuck paddling around in a circle. While all of this was going on, the survivors from Lebrecht Mass were still freezing their arses off in the water and waiting to be rescued. But as if two ships blowing themselves up was bad enough, the rescue was curtailed even further by mistaken reports of submarine and torpedo sightings that diverted the attention of the other destroyers. They thought they were being ambushed by the Royal Navy, so they freaked the fuck out and wasted 25 minutes trying to find an enemy that wasn't even there. So things are pretty bad. But wait, they are in fact about to get so much worse. What also definitely didn't help the situation was the fact that Erik Kölner was towing a boat full of rescued sailors. And despite that, she accelerated to full speed too quickly, which capsized the boat and killed everyone on board. Eventually, the surviving members of the flotilla realised that they were tilting at windmills, and at 25 to 9, the operation was called off. I dread to imagine the sinking feeling that they all must have had as they headed back home with the realisation that they'd been absolutely bodied by not only their own countrymen, but themselves. In the space of half an hour, the Germans managed to destroy two destroyers, damage a third, and kill 578 of their own men. Which is a pretty good result for most skirmishes when you're not fighting yourself. In the end, only 60 crew members from the Lebrecht Mass were rescued, and Max Schultz went down with no survivors. Despite their legendary engineering and technical prowess, the innate autism of the Germans ended up being their undoing because they just couldn't communicate properly. Thanks to the fact that the Kriegsmarine had no planes, air support couldn't be coordinated in a manner that was anywhere near efficient. So, as we discussed earlier, any kind of discussion that had anything to do with planes had to go all the way down the Kriegsmarine's chain of command, then all the way back up the Luftwaffe's chain of command, and any response had to go all the way back down the latter, and then back up the former. You get the idea. And you just had to pray that this game of bureaucratic Chinese whispers either didn't take too long or lead to a complete distortion of the original message. Which is exactly what happened during Operation Vikinger. The moral of this story is, just like in relationships, ships, communication is very important, because essentially, petty bureaucracy and Göring's ego caused a massive breakdown in communication that cost almost 600 lives and two destroyers. And what makes it even worse is that the higher-ups in the Kriegsmarine knew that the bombers were around and just didn't bother to tell the battleships about it, and vice versa. They knew what was going on, but by the time those in charge realised that an unidentified bomber menacingly approached half a dozen destroyers, they were too late to warn the bomber to identify himself or to tell the destroyers to chill the fuck out. And as with most huge systemic problems coming to a head as the result of loads of smaller problems happening at the same time, no one could even figure out whose fault this was. They couldn't even figure out who the mine that sunk the Max Schultz actually belonged to, because it later turned out that the British had also laid mines in the area not long before the mission. So she could have hit a British mine, but she just as easily could have went into her own fucking minefield. After all, the bombers had acted appropriately based on the intel that they were given, which was fucking none. In the end, the entire fiasco was such a shitshow that no one was disciplined or held responsible. And it became one of those things that the German brass just really didn't like to talk about. So, what did the Germans learn from such a clusterfuck? Well, I guess they learned not to do it again.
It's Count Dankula on YouTube! Everybody subscribe!